Big things come in small packages, so the saying goes, or great things come in small packages. And I think that's a very appropriate description of the letter to the Colossians. The letter itself is four very short chapters. You could go home and read it in about 10 minutes, maybe tops. It's a very short letter. And we're actually going to be working our way through a good chunk of this letter over the next 3 weeks. We're going to look at chapter 1 this week, and the lectionary has us in chapter 2 next week, and chapter 3 the following week. So we're going to take a stroll through this letter to the Colossians. So there's your homework assignment. Sometime this week, take a few minutes, take 5 minutes, and read through Paul's letter to the Colossians and see if this incredibly rich and powerful letter strikes a chord with you. Now, when Paul wrote this letter, he wrote it to a new church that was in the city of Colossa, which is located in what is today central Turkey. And there are two things that are very significant to note about the city and the church itself and the culture around it that prompted Paul to write this letter in the first place. Now, the city of Colossa is probably best described by Bruce Springsteen's songs, Glory Days. Are you familiar with the song? Glory Days, where the passing by, Glory Days, in the wink of a young girl's eye. You know the song, Glory Days? If you don't, it's a great song. But what is the song about? It's about somebody who, back in the day, maybe in high school or something like that, had something good going on. He did great at baseball or something like that. But since then, not much has happened. And they're still living their life in the shadow of former greatness, right? You remember Al Bundy from Married with Children, right? Just kind of trapped in this suburban marriage, you know, and all and everything, you know, the whole show is about how awful it was, but he had something going for him. Back in high school, he scored 4 touchdowns in 1 game for Polk High School, and whenever anything else is going wrong, by golly, he's got 4 touchdowns in the school record, right? That's glory days that have gone by. And what happens when you live in the shadow of those glory days is where you end up in the present is more often than not a very sad place. Right? Bruce Springsteen has a knack of writing songs that have a very up, happy tune, but if you listen to the words, they're actually really horrible. Like they're describing something very sad. I don't know if he does that on purpose or not, but there you go. And so he's describing scenes from various people's lives that are characterized by glory days in the past, but where they are now is actually kind of sad. And that's what happened to the city of Colossa. It was a booming industrial town in its day, and following an earthquake and some economic hardships, all the business crossed the valley and went to another town called Laodicea. Now, if you know your New Testament, Laodicea appears also in the scriptures. It's mentioned in Paul's letter, and it's also mentioned in Revelation for being the lukewarm church that Jesus vomits out of his mouth. So Colossae is a city that's living in the shadow of its former glory. Now, it's not a ghost town. It's still chugging along, but everybody remembers, you remember back when we were cool and when we were awesome, right? Wow, if we could just be like it was back in those days, right? Now, this is a very important lesson for not just individuals to learn, like Al Bundy, or you and me, but also for churches who can be haunted and live in the shadow of former glory days. Cities and towns alike today have that same problem. This is a very pointed yet subtle feature of human life. And Paul is very savvy to this when he's writing to the church in Colossae. That people, particularly Christians, need to know what truly defines them. And it ain't glory days gone by. The second key thing that Paul addresses in this letter to the Colossians that was part of the culture in the city around which this church, this young church, found itself, was a propensity to blend other ideas, other religions, other philosophies, enfolded into Christianity. And that's very tempting to do. After all, the Greco-Roman world was the jewel of the globe at that point, with philosophy and empire and buildings and culture, and, you know, gosh, who wouldn't want that? And along comes Christianity into the middle of this impressive Greco-Roman world, and, well, you know, we want to be like our neighbors. Like, we want to be cool. Right? And I think the same is true today. Christians today, particularly in America, I think desperately want to be seen as cool in the eyes of the culture around them. Relevant is the buzzword that you'll often hear thrown around. Is the church relevant to the culture? Well, I think the answer to that is very simple. In our culture, what matters? What matters is heightening forms of experience and ever-increasing opportunities for self-expression and the acquisition of wealth. And if that is your bag, baby, then a first-century Jewish carpenter slash rabbi who got executed has absolutely nothing to do with you. It has no relevance on your life whatsoever. But Paul is aware of this propensity to, this temptation to change our doctrines, to change what we believe so we can be cool and accepted in the eyes of our culture. And the temptation to do that is profound. Like 7-Up, always has been and always will be. And it's into this culture, into this city, that Paul is writing to this little church. And in chapter 1, where does he take the church? What is he talking about? What is he presenting and holding up right in front of them? He presents to them Jesus Christ. And he presents him in what is quite easily some of the most grand and lofty and high, what we would call high Christology, some of the most lofty language to describe Jesus Christ in the entire Bible. What does Paul say? If you want to look at your note, at your insert, that's fine. If not, I'll hit on a couple. He says that he is the image of the invisible God, that all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell in him, that all things were made through him and for him. Right? If you were to look at the lease on planet Earth, guess whose name's on it? Jesus. It's his. Paul's in one sense saying the same thing that John says at the beginning of his gospel. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Through him all things were made, and without him not one thing that has come into being was made. Right? Paul is saying almost the exact same thing, just in a slightly different way. He is presenting to the Colossians Jesus in all of his grand glory and saying, this is the guy who you're trusting. This is the one whom you are banking your soul on. This is the one that you have come to know in faith through the witness of the apostles. This is the guy that you're clinging to. Don't sell him out. This is the guy that matters. And he holds up Christ before them and describes him in as grand a way as you will ever find in the Bible. Paul also points out to the Colossians another key doctrine of the church. He reminds them that this Jesus, who is the image of the invisible God, came and did what? Opened a successful chain of bauble sales shops and sells tonic that will cure whatever ails you. No, that's not what he came to do. What did he come to do? He came to die. Paul reminds him that in Christ's physical body, this full God washed away the demands of the law against them, freed them from the curse of sin. Essentially, what Paul is doing here is he is reminding the Colossians of two of the most central doctrines of the Christian faith, the incarnation and the atonement. Because if you get those two wrong, you're going to get everything else wrong. If you forget those two ideas, you're going to forget a lot more. If you water down or change those two doctrines, what you end up with might be very nice and sweet and friendly, but it sure ain't Christianity. So why does that matter? Well, if you are listening to what Paul is saying, if what Paul is saying is true, if what I'm saying to you is true, that the invisible God who created everything came to the earth, and he came to die on a cross to take away your sin, how can that not change you? Because we live in a day and age that's obsessed with transformation and success and every manner of expression and identity that's running crazy. And Paul is saying, your identity is not found in your city or in the extent to which you can post the most selfies with the most likes. Your identity is found in the God who came to the earth and who died for you. That changes you. And that also tells me that no matter what city you are in, you are still a Christian. That you can be in Aleppo, Syria, where people are getting their heads chopped off for their faith, and still be a Christian. You can be in a city that's had rough times, like in Dayton. And your identity is not tied to the ups and downs of your city. Your identity is found in Christ. Or you can be in a city that, hey, everything's golden and rosy and awesome. But I am still in Christ. That's what Paul is saying. He's saying, know the one who has redeemed you. Don't change what you believe about him. It's tempting. Paul says, don't stand firm in what we believe, because what we believe does matter. It's not just a head trip. It's not just academics. It's not just theology. It matters. And so let me close by saying that Paul's message to the church in the first century is every bit as applicable and relevant in the 21st century without a whole lot of gymnastics if we have ears to hear. And I pray that Paul's message would resonate with us and that we would indeed know the one who is the image of the invisible God and who died for you and for me. And as we continue in our journey through Colossians, may we stand firm in what we believe about Jesus Christ, who does not change.